Welcome back to Reboot with Dr. Arasi Maran, the show where we dig into the science of health and wellness so you can literally live life to the fullest, one heartbeat at a time. I'm your host, Dr. Arasi Maran, interventional cardiologist at the Medical University of South Carolina, but this podcast is completely separate from my duties as a faculty member in the university. Today, we are flying solo because we are dealing with a topic which I deal with almost with every patient I see in clinic, leg swelling, also known as lower extremity edema. By the end of this episode, you should understand why your ankles look like marshmallows, how your heart, liver, and kidneys play a role, and what you can do about chronic venous insufficiency, and what is dependent edema, know the differences. Could you be having something, a very serious condition called lymphedema? Stick around. This is going to be a juicy one and maybe a little soggy one as well. As you know, I am not at home. This is not my usual recording studio. I'm at Seattle, Washington, here for a cardiology conference. I come here every year for this amazing conference where we deal with the most complex cases, and we talk about what if things goes wrong to these cases. It's my yearly pilgrimage to Seattle, Washington. Well, let's forget about that. Now, before we dig in and dive into this topic, please hit subscribe or give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcast or Spotify. If any of my podcasts have impacted you or you've learned something or shared something with someone where it made a difference, I would truly appreciate it. So let's go to the show, keeping up with the edema. Let's reboot those legs. First things first, what is edema? Edema just means an abnormal accumulation of fluid in the tissue spaces. Think of your legs or your body itself has, you know, skin, fat, fascia, muscle, bones, veins, etc. In between, there's tissue called interstitial spaces, okay? These are just sponges, okay? And these sponges can get filled up with fluid, with extra fluid, and it's not like there's a pocket of fluid collection, okay? It is more like the sponge is laden with fluid and you can wring the sponge and fluid comes out. This fluid is normally filtered out by capillaries or teeny tiny blood vessels or even lymphs, which is basically like an extra sink. It's a secondary mechanism. So think of it as you have big blood vessels, arteries and veins. Arteries carry the pure blood. Veins carry the deoxygenated or the impure blood. And these two kind of break down into teeny tiny meshwork of capillaries. And surrounding the capillaries is your secondary drainage system called the lymphatics. So this capillary system and this lymphatic drainage system kind of sucks the fluid and keeps the flow in balance. So there is no accumulation of fluid and therefore your interstitial sponge is nice and dry. But if the fluid balance system is messed up for different reasons, and we'll go over the reason, then there's accumulation of excess fluid and the spongy tissue gets laden with fluid. And we'll go over the thing, and there are specific forces which act on the mechanism or the balance. It's a very delicate balance. The major force is called the Starling forces. And the Starling forces is basically two systems of pressures, the capillary hydrostatic or the fluid pressure system, or the oncotic pressures. Or oncotic pressures are derived from the protein, especially albumin molecules. And the balance between the hydrostatic and the oncotic pressure keeps this balance going and keeps it nice and dry. So, you know, we talked about the big vessels breaking down into smaller blood vessels. That breaks down even further into arterioles. And in capillaries, it's an arteriovenous connection where the arterial system and the venous system come together. And it's just a meshwork. You know, you really cannot say this is the arterial side or the venous side. It just collaborates and it's a meshwork. And it's a push-pull force between the hydrostatic forces and the oncotic forces, which is truly balanced by your albumins, which keeps this balance going. So there are multiple reasons why you can have swelling in your leg. It could be as simple as, oh, you've had a long day, to I ate a very salty meal, to you have heart failure, liver failure, or kidney failure, or your lymph system does not work. So the lymph system, as I told you, it's a secondary drainage network. Your body never allows functions with one system. There's always a backup system. The lymphatic drainage system is the secondary drainage mechanism. And it ultimately, the lymph fluid is like a wasted fluid, but it's a very important fluid. It is a very important system. If that is messed up, you really get very difficult to treat lymph edema. And that can also be extremely problematic. And it can be very difficult to treat because it's ubiquitous. Lymph system is everywhere and not specifically in one place. And the lymph capillaries become little bit bigger tubes and then become lymph nodes. And I'm sure you may have heard about lymph nodes where cancer cells spread, or if you have infection, a throat infection, you can feel little nodules or swelling around your neck, which is basically acts as an immune system. So it's not just a wastage drainage system, it's a very important immunological function as well. So it's a very delicate balance of all of this. So even if the lymph system gets overwhelmed, like after surgery or because of infection or inflammation or irradiation, then the balance is off and swelling can happen. So let's go on to the most common causes of lower extremity swelling or leg swelling. And number one reason is heart failure. And you're like, how is the heart affecting the legs? I mean, you usually think of a heart failure, have difficulty breathing, etc. But no, the heart failure is a very common cause of lower extremity swelling. And why that is, we've discussed this in other episodes, but I'll just go over this again. If you remember, I told you the heart is a pump. The pump has a fuel mechanism, it has an electrical system, and it has valves to make sure the fluid flows in a particular way. The ultimate function of the pump is to pump out the blood from the heart to the rest of the body. So if you have a massive heart attack or you have weakness of the heart pump for whatever reason, maybe you had COVID, maybe you have tuberculosis, maybe you have some sort of a viral infection which affected your heart muscle, and the pump is now weak and it is not pumping out all the fluid backs up. And it backs up into your lungs first, and your lungs get overwhelmed. The lung is a spongy tissue, and it fills up with fluid, and then gravity takes on, it goes to your legs, and then from your legs, it can come to your belly, and then it can come back to your lungs again and fill you with fluid. Pretty much you're drowning from inside. So the left-sided heart failure is a big reason for lower extremity swelling. You can also get right-sided heart failure. I'll talk about that in a time. But nevertheless, if you have a diagnosis of heart failure and if your legs are swelling up and they were not swollen 1 or 2 weeks ago, then you may be going from a compensated heart failure stage where your body was in balance with the weakness of the pump to a decompensated heart failure stage where you are beginning to accumulate fluid. And if you ignore your ankle swelling, it will get worse and move up to your calves and move up to your mid-thigh. And if you are sedentary or if you're just laying back now because you're tired, you can get swelling right at the back behind your sacrum. And eventually you will get shortness of breath, and because your lungs are now swollen. And this is the time where you're going to bed and you're waking up in the middle of the night because something uncomfortable is happening. We call it paroxysmal nocturnal dyspnea. And you have to sit up straight or you have to walk to kind of rebalance the pressures, or you're not able to lay flat at all and you're beginning to pile up pillows because you're having difficulty breathing. This means your heart failure is getting worse and you have to go and call your doctor, maybe start diuretic therapy. Diuretics is just a mechanism where we pull extra fluid. Your kidneys work extra hard and pull fluid out of your body. Or you may have to adjust other medications. When this happens, there's a secondary mechanism in heart failure which causes fluid retention, that is, which comes from your kidneys. So in heart failure, heart is not pumping enough blood. The kidneys think, the kidneys are like, oh, I'm not getting enough fluid into my kidney system. And therefore, it's going to activate what is called a renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system. Forget about the big fancy name. It basically activates sodium and water retention. Sodium is salt, and salts and water starts retaining, and then you start swelling up. If you have had heart failure for a long time, it eventually messes up with the absorption of protein from the diet, and also production of albumin specifically from your liver, and your protein levels are low. And you have hypoalbuminemia, fancy word for low protein, which again lowers the oncotic pressure. So now you have higher hydrostatic pressure where fluid is accumulating, and the oncotic pressure, or the little sponges which keep the fluid balance, is gone, and you start swelling up. And your doctor can adjust your medications, can put you on diuretics, switch you up from lisinopril or losartan to Entresto, or add aldactone or eplerenone or other medications based on your kidney function, based on your potassium levels, based on your heart function, which can all help you. There are also newer medications called SGLT2 inhibitors, which is basically the Jardiance and Farxiga, which all works with the kidneys and the heart and tries to get you back into balance. So if you or someone you know is struggling with heart failure and diuretic dosing, share your story with me and tag Reboot with Dr. Arasi Maran, or just hashtag Reboot, and I might read it on the next episode, because your story might be personal to you, but it could potentially help somebody else. So please share your stories. Now, let's move on to the liver. Why do patients with liver failure get swelling in the legs? Well, two main culprits. One, liver is the biggest factory, like it is the workhorse of the body, and liver needs all the support it can get. When your heart fails, you can put the patient on ECMO, balloon pump, impeller, etc. Kidney fails, you can put them on dialysis, but there is no mechanism to rescue the liver. So liver is truly one of the most important organs. Nature has given it back up because liver has phenomenal ability to regenerate from extreme injury. But if you push it hard enough, it will go to the point of no return and you will get cirrhosis. We've discussed about this with Dr. Apoorva Modi and with Dr. Satish Nadeeg in the first season of Reboot with Dr. Arasi Maran. Liver affects causes swelling in two mechanisms. One is reduced albumin synthesis, and the next is portal hypertension. That is, portal system is the secondary circulation within the liver and the intestines. Okay. And if those pressures within that system increases, then your hydrostatic pressure is again off balance. Your oncotic pressure goes down, and then you get swelling. And swelling, kind of unlike the spongy tissue swelling, you will get actual accumulation of fluid in your belly, and you will see these liver patients with big bellies, like they are carrying a twin pregnancy or a triplet pregnancy or a multiple pregnancy, whatever. And they get so-called large volume paracentesis because they are just ridiculously uncomfortable, or large volume drainage of fluid through a needle on a regular basis because the liver is gone and you literally have no other mechanism. So you end up with swelling in your legs, but you can also get swelling in your belly. And invariably, the tissue fluid travels, and you will get difficulty breathing. And it's the same mechanism. So this is how liver patients can eventually get swelling and distension of their belly. And this gets even more problematic if your serum albumin gets less than 3 g/dL. It's a big risk for worsening fluid in the belly or ascites or lower extremity edema. You can manage that with sodium restriction. It works to a certain extent. Medications like aldactone or spironolactone can help. Very careful diuretics can help. But nevertheless, if you have florid liver failure, as we have discussed before, the ultimate cure is liver transplantation. But liver is a very, very, very precious organ, and not available willy-nilly. And therefore, taking care of it and preventing your liver from going into liver failure is the absolute key. In the past, the most common cause of liver failure was alcohol. But now, the most common cause of liver failure is non-alcoholic steatohepatitis or non-alcohol-related fatty liver disease, which is truly, truly a metabolic condition which comes from insulin resistance and when you eat extremely highly processed food and things like that. So it all comes down to we are what we eat, and please take care of these precious organs before they are pushed to the maximum extent. Now, let's move on to kidneys. You know, kidneys is the keystone in the fluid balance, because if your kidneys don't work, you're not making urine. And if you're not making urine, where does the water go? It has to go somewhere. It'll go to the tissues. Our body should make at least 1 to 2 liters of urine per day, depending upon your fluid intake, depending on your fluid, your physical activity, etc. But 1 to 1.5 liters is the normal expectation. And if those 1 to 1.5 liters per day is not going out, your body is going to find a way to reaccumulate or redistribute that fluid. So urine is, it's not that the actual urine is getting stored in the tissues. It's just fluid in the form, in some different form, is getting stored. And when your kidney function is getting worse, you can initially give a diuretic challenge where they give you pretty high doses of diuretics at the hospital and monitor your urine output. But of course, if it goes beyond a particular extent, you have lost your kidney function and you will need dialysis. And even when you're on dialysis, you get dialyzed 3 times a week, but your body makes 1.5 liters of urine every day. So in between dialysis, patients do swell up with fluid. And sometimes, usually kidney patients have associated heart disease, they will have heart failure. And it becomes such a tug of war where the heart wants your body to be nice and dry, your kidney wants more fluid to make urine, and it's a balancing act. And cardiologist or a nephrologist or a kidney doctor will kind of help you in the process. So it's important to know what your dry weight or your target weight is so that you can maintain your body at that particular weight. In general, we tell patients, if you have gained 2 pounds overnight or 5 pounds over the course of 7 days, that's not fat, that's fluid. Call your doctor, call your healthcare provider to figure out what you can do with your medication regimen so that you don't have to go to the hospital. But the problem is, if you miss this cutoff and you wait when your body is accumulating fluid, your intestines are also swimming in fluid and they swell up, and the medications you take by mouth are not absorbed in the intestines. And even though you're taking a diuretic by mouth, they're not getting absorbed, they're not working, and you will have to go to the hospital to get IV medications so that they can kickstart your body. So please keep all of this in mind. And especially if you're a caregiver, you know, and you're taking care of a person who has liver failure, kidney failure, heart failure, check out what their dry weight is. Monitor their weight every day. And if there is rapid, big fluctuations in their weight, it's time to call for help. Now, yes, we have dealt with the big, serious conditions. There are other conditions which are more nuisance factor, not life-altering, but nuisance factor. They bother you and affect the quality of life situations, which can also cause lower extremity edema. One is chronic venous insufficiency. That is basically, we have arteries which, from the heart take the blood to the organs, and you have veins which collects the deoxygenated blood from the muscles and tissues and brings it towards the heart. Okay, it flows away against gravity. Because they flow against gravity, our body has valves inside, one-way valves inside these veins, so that the blood just flows upward and doesn't reflux back. But as we grow old, pregnancy, multiple pregnancies, or if you are a smoker, or if you just have rapid weight loss, rapid weight gain, kind of, you're yo-yoing with your diet and you're not exercising adequately, or just genetically, you just have weaker valves, the valves fail and the venous blood, instead of just going towards your heart, starts refluxing towards the legs, and you can get, spider veins, varicose veins, etc. And all of that can also lead to lower extremity edema or swelling around the ankles. They may not kill you, but they can annoy you because your legs can potentially swell from the beginning of the day to the end of the day. The skin around the ankles can get discolored because the iron in the blood kind of starts depositing and causes stasis, dermatitis, or hemosiderin deposits, etc. And in later stages, initially, the swelling, if you push against the bone, or if you wear a shoe, you can see the outline of the shoe, or if you wear a sock, you can see the outline of the sock. That's called pitting edema. But later on, as time goes by, fibrotic tissue starts forming around this ankle area and it becomes non-pitting edema and the swelling constantly stays. Now, what do you do for situations like that? Pregnancy, thankfully, it's a temporary situation. And once you've delivered the baby, it kind of recovers back. But when you just have varicose veins and stasis, dermatitis, etc., compression stockings become your friend. And they are difficult to wear, but when you get used to them, you have to wear them and it's beautiful. It helps you a lot and you have to wear it every time you're standing. And the best way to wear them is to lay in bed, lift your legs, empty the veins and have somebody else assist you to put it. And then you stand up so that it gives you good compression. You can also get fitted for compression stockings where they will fit you, get measurements. And there are also compression stocking devices, like, you know, you have like a zipper or a tool to kind of help you aid you to wear the compression stockings. Leg elevation, when you know you're going on a long car journey, elevating your legs makes a big difference. And of course, finally, exercise, calf strengthening exercise, quad strengthening exercise can strengthen the calf muscles and eventually help your venous return to be better. And finally, you can go to endovascular or endovenous ablation procedures. Lots of vascular surgery folks, interventional radiology folks, and even plastic surgeons do ablation procedures, which can help with the swelling. Some are cosmetic. Some can actually help the swelling itself, and they can be helpful. If the problem with it is, I told you, it's nuisance value. If you don't treat them, eventually you can get stasis dermatitis, and that can lead to ulcers, and which can ultimately require even more treatment. So gravity is not our friend, even though it's a good thing to have. Dependent edema is just simply fluid pooling in the lower part of the leg, or if you're lying down in your back. So frequent movement, leg elevation, compression sleeves, those are your things you can do to take care of it. Now, there is an even more serious condition called lymphedema. That is a truly, truly difficult condition to take care of. Lymphedema is obstruction or damage to the lymph vessels, which we talked about earlier. And because of that, the lymph, the secondary drainage system is not doing its job, and you start having severe swelling. This swelling, unlike the other edemas we've talked about so far, is completely non-pitting. It happens, it can be just in the affected limb. Like, for example, if you've had breast cancer and if you have your lymph nodes removed as a part of your breast cancer treatment, it can be because of that. Or if you had radiation therapy, it can be because of that. Or sometimes you can even, like mosquitoes, filariasis, which is basically an infection of the lymphatics caused by a mosquito bite, can lead to fibrosis and thickening of the lymphatic system and obstruction. And it's very difficult to treat. There are complex decongestive therapies where they do manual lymph drainage and compression bandages, which can kind of help. Lasers, pneumatic pumps can be used. There are very few surgeons across the world who can actually reconstruct the lymph system, but they are far and few to be found because it's a very difficult problem to take care of. So again, prevention, when you're talking, having cancer treatments, talk about that. And there are preventive mechanisms and compression socks, sleeves, which you can wear, which can help with that. So think about that again, and prevention, an ounce of prevention is worth better than a pound of cure. So let's hit fast forward. Let me recap what we talked about. Edema is just fluid in the interstitium or the spongy tissue in your whole body. Heart failure can cause edema because of venous backup or renin angiotensin activation system, etc. But because your heart is not pumping very well and the fluid can back up. Liver failure can cause edema because of lower albumin and high pressures within the portal system. Kidney failure, you're not making urine, the fluid has to go somewhere, and then you ultimately get a retention of fluid everywhere. You can get edema because of chronic venous insufficiency, which is basically failure of the valves in the veins, which leads to reflux and subsequently inflammation. And sometimes you do get dependent edema just because you've been standing too long and your legs are overwhelmed. Compression stockings is a great friend. Lymphedema is the most difficult condition to treat in amongst all of that. And it can be because of fibrosis or infection itself. So if you've learned one new thing, head over to Apple Podcast or Spotify right now and drop us a review or a rating itself. So, and also, I have some exciting news to relay. We are changing a lot within the reboot. We are rebooting the reboot with Dr. R.C. Maran platform. We are changing our logos, exciting colors. The team is working really hard. If you want a sneak peek, follow us on Instagram at Dr. R.C. Maran. As always, your health is in your hands. Don't let no be an answer. Dig deep, find the root cause of your problem, and let's get back into action. I am Dr. R.C. Maran, interventional cardiologist. This is Reboot with Dr. R.C. Maran. Follow us for more health-related tips. Thank you so much for listening. If you found us valuable, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any of your favorite podcast app. And also, please consider leaving us a rating or a review, as that helps others find the podcast too. I hope you have a great week ahead.